Have you ever visited a farm to pick your own apples or berries, or buy the freshest possible Halloween pumpkin or Christmas tree, or to let your kids get up close to some livestock, or to try to figure out a corn maze? Farms that offer these activities are part of the agritourism industry, where traditional farming activities are dressed up for paying customers. I'm Jim Meadows, and today on Focus, we'll look at agritourism with guests from Hardy's Reindeer Ranch and Curtis Orchard, two agritourism success stories in Champaign County, plus an agritourism expert from the Illinois Extension. Agritourism today on Focus. Our program begins after the news. Welcome to Focus. I'm Jim Meadows. Hardy's Reindeer Ranch near Rantoul and Curtis Orchard and Pumpkin Patch near Champaign both draw thousands of visitors each year, and that's a point worth driving home. Most farms are not looking for visitors. Most people are not looking to visit them. But Hardy's and Curtis are part of that segment of farming known as agritourism. Today we'll be talking to Steve Ayers of the U of I Extension about agritourism, but we are also talking with two agritourism farmers. In the studio with me is Randy Graham, the co-owner of Curtis Orchard. Welcome to Focus, Randy.
Thank you, Jim.
And on the phone, because it's real busy this time of year, Mark Hardy, co-owner of Hardy's Reindeer Ranch. Good morning, Mark.
Hey, good morning.
Okay. You know, one experience that both of you offer to the public, which has been fascinating us here at the station for some reason, is a corn maze, which is literally a maze carved into a cornfield where people go in and they have to figure out how to get out without being able to see the whole pattern. And Mark, how many people are you expecting to visit your maze at Hardy's Reindeer Ranch?
We usually average around 10,000 people going through the maze.
Now, this is there's a picture of your maze at your website, and I should note that there are links to both the Curtis and the Hardy's websites at our website at will.illinois.edu/focus. The maze is actually a picture in your case, Mark.
Right. Yeah, it's an image. This year's image is a we call it Easy Rider. It's a chopper, and anyway, it covers 10 acres and has different checkpoints out there that relate to choppers or motorcycles, and takes an hour to 3 hours to complete.
And how do you make these things?
Well, I start out, I come up with an idea. Like, we've done different things from, we did a Bears maze when the Bears played in town, or the Illini when they went to the Final Four. But anyway, come up with a image that I can draw that fits into a 10-acre field. And I draw the image, plant the field, and then I work with a company that will, like an ag company that has a real accurate GPS, and they will help me map it out. They will take the image and send it up to satellites, and somebody out with either a backpack reader and or on a four-wheeler, and the image is on in the screen. I'm following behind them, and then we just flag. I'm flagging all the lines out behind him, and then when the corn's about a foot tall or so, I cut it out.
So you started early when things are low and you can see over everything.
Yeah, and then you can kind of feel, you know, the image, you know, depending on what it is. Just because it's short then. But, yeah, you cut the corn out when it's little.
Okay. And, Randy, I understand your maze is not a pitcher in your case.
That's correct. Ours is a bit smaller than Mark's, about 3 acres, and so we've opted to go for difficulty over a picture. We have also marking stations out in the maze to give them an additional challenge. And the customers, if they can find all of those marking stations, then they can redeem that coupon for an inflatable slide ride or a wagon tour of the orchard. So they get a little extra value if they complete the maze. But my son builds the maze, and it's quite difficult. I've only found 2 of the 4 marker stations so far myself.
Well, if you've ever walked through a corn maze or picked your own apples or pumpkins, let us know how you find it rewarding. Tell us about your experiencing visiting farms in the agritourism sector. Or you can ask a question of Mark Hardy and Randy Graham. Call them toll-free at 1-800-222-9455. That's toll-free, 1-800-222-WILL. And you can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. We also welcome your questions on Facebook and Twitter at Focus580. You said it's, what, 1 to 3 hours in the maze, Mark?
Yeah, depending on how good you are at navigating it. But, yeah, at least an hour. And some people just give up after that. But
how do you get out if you're stuck in there?
We actually put emergency exits in different points if you just want to get out. And some people find 1, 2, 3, half of them, and then some people are determined to find all 8. So, you know, if they want to get out, they can get out at a couple different points.
Is this something that people will go in? I mean, do you get families? Do you get, like, say, groups of college kids? Who comes to the maze?
We get a variety. The families would be daytime and the younger kids. And we get a large group. The University of Illinois is nearby. So a lot of the kids come out from the University of Illinois, but they come out after dark for the most part. And what we'll do is September will only open till 8. We extend hours just on Fridays and Saturdays till 10 just to kind of accommodate them. We tell them they have to be here by 9 to get their tickets and that. But it will fill up like from 7 o'clock to 9, and mostly university kids and some high school and that.
Okay. Brandon, you said you've gone for more complexity in the maze. You ever gotten lost in your own maze?
Yeah, this year it's really challenging. Some years you can get your bearings even from inside the corn. I can see where the apple trees are. There's also a tower in the center of the maze, and you can see the tower. But this year, because the weather was so perfect for growing corn, the corn is so tall that you can't see anything. And usually if you got a person, if you're out there as a team and you got a person in the tower person could assist the ones down in the maze. But this year, the tower doesn't even do a benefit because the corn is so tall. So it's really challenging this year.
Mark, you have the larger acreage for your corn maze. What is it like in there, being inside that field? I mean, is it quiet, or can you hear other people in the maze?
It depends on if there's hundreds of kids out there. Yeah, and I'll hear people yelling back and forth. They're trying to find different stuff, and they'll Marco Polo stuff. But anyway, they'll try and help each other, so you hear that sometimes. If you have junior high kids out there, they're extremely loud. The college kids, not so much. And I forgot what you just said. But anyway, yeah, there's nights here that, you know, you may have 500 kids out there. And we actually hire, we call them corn cops, and they patrol the maze and you know, either help, or if the kids are misbehaving, like cutting through the corn or throwing corn or smoking, pray tell, they're escorted out. But anyway, yeah, it takes a little bit just to manage it, just, you know, just the size and numbers and stuff like that.
And meanwhile, this, you know, this is a cornfield. Are you going to harvest the corn that's growing there?
Yeah, the corn, and like last year, it made, I think, 100 bushel the acre after the kids have trampled it, and it stayed up till usually after Thanksgiving. And this year, it actually looks very good. We plant it probably not till, you know, the 1st of June or so, so it still has a little bit of green left in it, but it usually does, you know, 100 bushel or more, you know, compared to, you know, the guys out here, 150 to 200 is, you know, normal around here.
Randy, how's your corn crop looking this year?
Well, ours doesn't usually yield very much because part of what I do to make the maize more difficult is I plant in three directions, east, west, north, south, and then diagonal.
You mean the rows of corn?
Correct.
So it's make it easier to get lose your sense of direction there?
Yeah, because then there's no rows. I mean, I cut across the rows diagonally so that there's solid corn wherever you look. So you can't just run down a 30-inch wide corn row to make progress. It's like a mesh of corn. So I'm not looking for yield. I'm looking to make life difficult for these maize growers.
Now, I'm wondering, for both of you, this is not the first feature that you opened up to attract the public. Has this been a big part of the attraction for both of you? Mark, how has it worked for you?
Just because we attract, it's a different demographic. It's your high school, college kids, which are usually don't, you know, come out to things like this. it attracts them, which is kind of neat. And yes, it's probably one of the more profitable things we do here. We do a lot of other activities, but it seems to draw the most attention. And it surprises me sometimes because I didn't think mazes, we've been doing them for 14 years, I didn't think they'd hang in there. But they still intrigue people, and I mean, I got people that come back year after year to do it, and it seems to hold on to its, people enjoy doing it. It's interesting.
Now, my understanding is you really started looking for the public when you brought in the reindeer, and how many years ago was that?
Well, we started out with two reindeer. We started out with 5 acres of Christmas trees. I grow Christmas trees out here, and I was going to just sell them out of the garage and that, and my married a gal that was worked for Avon. She was a manager, and she wanted to do, like, the whole Christmas thing out here. So, anyway, with the help of her dad and my dad, we built a gift shop. We tore down barns and built a nice gift shop. We had the trees, and then she wanted to get an animal attraction that went with Christmas time, and found out we could get reindeer. So we bought our first 2 reindeer then, and then went back and bought another 13 of them from Alaska and had them shipped in, just because they work well. I mean, they were bringing people in, and we kind of wanted to expand, to a little bit, fall and possibly year round.
I know, just as a kid, a lot of the depictions I saw of reindeer, as in Santa's reindeer, were not quite accurate. I think they were actually thinking of deer rather than reindeer. Reindeers are a good bit stockier than deer.
A reindeer is like, to me, they look like a small cow. In fact, they are. They're called the cow of the north. They would be a domesticated caribou, basically, and have been domesticated in their native land, which is Norway and Siberia and Mongolia, for thousands and thousands of years, and very important animals because of their ability to survive extreme temperature colds, like 50 below. They're actually very amazing animals. And care-wise, like I say, more like a cow. A deer will jump fences and that. These guys really don't jump fences and that.
They're just happy to stay where the grass, wherever the feed is, I take it.
Yeah, they're fed well, so yeah.
Do you have any of the domesticated enough to, say, pull a sleigh or something like that?
They're extremely friendly. The more you work with them, just like if you had a cow or a horse, the more you work with them, the better they are. I have a couple, 2 or 3, that can be displayed. Like I can go to Chicago, I can go to Peoria, and if somebody's doing a parade or a Christmas program, I'll set up and display the animals and that, and they do fine. I mean, they're typically females is what I take, and they do fine.
This is Focus. I'm Jim Meadows. We are talking about agritourism with 2 farmers who are pretty successful at it. Mark Hardy of Hardy's Reindeer Ranch and Randy Graham of Curtis Orchard and Pumpkin Patch. Plus, we have with us Steve Ayers with the U of I Extension, who works with small farmers and local food systems. Our phone number, 1-800-222-9455. And that's 1-800-222-WILL, the email address will-talk@illinois.edu. Both of you started out, with a single attraction, the reindeer, and I guess for you, Randy, it was the pick-your-own orchard.
Correct.
And you've both added a lot of things over the years. How do you figure out what people want? Is this a pretty competitive environment, figuring out what will bring people in? Maybe, Mark, can I start with you?
Sure. People kind of let you know what they're after. I mean, the cut-your-own trees are popular. I started bringing in pre-cut, and that works good. It's kind of a nice combination. And then after a while, you have to start dealing. Like if you got numbers, you've got the shop is popular, but it's only so big. So we built a banquet hall here, and that was mainly for traveling groups, like seniors, like bank clubs and that, to travel. And we had enough coming that we could justify saying, okay, well, we'll build this, and then we can do some local stuff like rehearsal dinners and weddings and things like that, company picnics. And so anyway, went ahead and built that building, and then that gives us enough room to operate. When you have numbers, you have to spread people out. You have to have heated buildings and bathrooms and parking and all that. It just kind of, one leads into the other.
Randy, in your case, you were starting with really pick your own. And what was the next thing you did, and how did you get the idea for doing it?
Well, my in-laws, Paul and Joyce Curtis, actually founded the orchard. They planted the first trees in 1977, and their first crop was in 1980. And that year, they imagined picking the apples or letting people pick their own and then selling the rest out of their garage. Well, it wasn't long before that didn't work out because they had more apples than they knew what to do with. And that first year, they had a hailstorm, and they were completely inexperienced apple growers, and they suddenly discovered not every apple's a number one. So they went out and bought a cider press. So that was the start of another portion of our business. And then some years later, we were trying to market more apples in October. It seemed like October things were slowing down a bit. So we thought, well, maybe if we put in a few pumpkins, people will come out for the pumpkins and buy some apples. It was all about trying to sell the apple crop initially. But then the pumpkins took off, and now they rival the apples as far as sales go. So some of these things you stumble into. Other things you see what other orchards and similar businesses are doing and develop friendships and a network. And people are pretty willing to share in this business because it is such a small group of people and tight-knit, and we all kind of live the same life. So usually we're willing to share what works for us and what doesn't work, and that helps a lot. And what works for one won't necessarily work for another. So you have to kind of evaluate it, discuss it as a management team, and say, is this a direction we should go with whatever new idea comes along? For instance, a bakery idea, we saw other orchards doing bakeries. We thought, well, we should make some donuts, I guess, you know, but we didn't really think that would ever be profitable. And now it's like the tail wagging the dog, you know, the apple crisp donuts, there's lines for them. It's unbelievable.
Mark, for you, what is the biggest attraction? What's the biggest part of your operation now?
And we do a lot of activities. We also do like groups at, you know, like Weenie Rose, and because of our location, we're kind of, you know, we're away from everything. But anyway, we offer packages that include activities and like a cookout, a Weenie Rose with s'mores and hot dogs and things like that. So we do a lot of youth groups, birthday parties, things like that. And then it's just general public. I mean, you've got, you know, your weekends in October, they're coming out to do hay rides and get a pumpkin and do a reindeer tour and mainly activities out here. We do have concessions just in October from like 11 to 4 on Saturday and then 12 to 4 on Sunday. And that's not as big a part of our operation. We do offer it mainly because people are out here through the lunch hour and that. But there, for the most part, people are out here doing activities and that, seems like.
So it's really an experience that they're getting. I mean, of course, there are folks coming to buy Christmas trees, but
right.
But they're really getting an experience from coming over to your place.
Right. They're coming back to the farm. It's real pretty. I mean, you got all the trees and the flowers and all, but they're coming out to the farm to get, you know, back to the some of their roots or whatever. But just to experience being out in the country, you know, in the fall and that, and whether it's walking through a corn maze or doing a hayride around the farm or, you know, going in and visiting with the reindeer or the shop. We got a neat shop and that. But stuff like that, I think they just want to get out to the country.
How many people do you employ for Hardy's Reindeer Ranch?
Six, eight, ten on the weekends. We'll bring in family and friends and that. Just on the busy weekend. Otherwise, you know, like a day like today, just me and my wife, we're working here, and there might just be a few cars come through. But no, we prepare for the weekends and get some help.
And over at Curtis Orchard, Randy, how many? What's on the payroll there?
We have five families that are supported full time year round by the orchard, and like on a day like today, we have about 30, and on the weekends, probably about 80.
80 people working there.
A lot of people working, yeah.
So this is really a lot different than if you were just growing a crop on your own, as to what both of you would be doing, I think.
Oh, it's very, very different, yeah. I think that's one thing that people who are interested in agritourism need to consider is you're getting into a whole different line of work. Yes, growing the crop is a portion of that work, but it's much larger than that.
Okay. Mark, I'm wondering, this just sounds like a business where you really have to be adventurous, because this is certainly not exactly what you were doing a few years ago. What's been the most unexpected thing you've had to learn how to do?
Dealing with public is interesting. I'm the guy that, you know, that plants the trees and builds and things like that. My wife is very good at marketing and that, but it's always interesting. We've had, like, a couple weeks ago, we had two big groups of Brazilians out here, and we had a French group, and they come out just to see what agritourism. They must not have it down there, but anyway, it's interesting, the people that come through here. I get a kick out of, you know, some of the groups and the people that come through. And the rest of it, I mean, the reindeer, you never know, you know, like the calving. We had a lot of problems calving this year, which is a big problem. But, you know, you talk to other reindeer people, it's like, well, you know, what are you treating your calves with, you know, so they'll live? And that's the most challenging part of, you know, could be the animals. I mean, they go into rut and they're dangerous and hard to deal with. The rest of it, you know, you build and plan, and you know, yeah, the weather can be a problem, but, you know, so sometimes the animals and that can be very challenging to work with.
So do you have a growing herd?
We keep 18 to 20 animals, and like last year we had six calves born, and we lost three of them, and then that was actually a good year. This year we had four calves born, and they'd live a week or so, and then they would die, which... The animals are very valuable. You know, they're people want to, you know, they're begging me to buy the animals. They're getting kind of hard to find. But just getting everything right and being able to save the calves is a big deal now. I mean, once I get them past a month or two, I you know, they'll live, you know, 15, 18 years or so. But, you know, I've got animals that are getting older, and I need some replacement calves. And you know, there's people going clear back up to Alaska to try and find some now, but they're just not plentiful, and I'm not sure if they're doing okay down here, but they're not like, you know, cows and all that, you know, that you routinely get your calf crop off of and stuff.
So it's a tricky business keeping reindeer.
It kind of is. I used a dairy farm before this, and kind of similar. I mean, the animals are, you know, we use the university vets out here, and they can help with a lot of stuff. There's some stuff they, you know, they can't, but like I say, they this calving problem is not a good thing. You don't want to run out of animals, just because we need a certain number of animals just for display and to have here, and to, you know, to replace the older animals that are passing away.
One more question before I let you go, Mark. I know you have to leave midpoint in our program. The Christmas tree market. How has the Christmas tree market done over the years? I know that there's a definite market for artificial Christmas trees. They work real hard to make those things realistic as possible. But it sounds like you still have people coming in who want a real tree.
We do a pretty good business. The trees. I've got a certain number of cut-your-owns. If I could grow two or three times that number, it would be great. There's a big demand for cut-your-owns, and they're disappearing real fast. The people that do it are retiring and getting out of it. It's pretty challenging in itself. I do bring in, like, Fraser firs and that, and they are very real good sellers. The Christmas tree market's pretty consistent. I mean, we sell about 1,000 a year, and you know, it seems pretty consistent. So we try to order the right number so you don't have to throw a bunch of them out. And, the Christmas trees are probably they're a big part, obviously, of our Christmas time around here.
Okay. Well, Mark Hardy, I know you have to take off early, but I want to thank you for being on the program today. Mark Hardy of Hardy's Reindeer Ranch near Rantoul. You'll find a link to their website at our website at will.illinois.edu. And thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Well, thank you for having me, and we'll go get busy now.
Okay. Time for a short break, And we'll be back in a moment with more about agritourism on Focus on WILL. We're back on Focus on WILL. I'm Jim Meadows. Just a note, tomorrow in the program, we'll be rounding up some of the latest news and trends in politics with a panel of political junkies, including Amanda Vinicky of Illinois Public Radio over at the Springfield Bureau. On Friday, we'll have a conversation with award-winning science fiction author Kim Stanley Robinson. He's in town for a symposium about science fiction and the humanities at the University of Illinois. Our next Lawn and Garden Advice program is set for a week from Friday, October 4th. Right now, we're talking about agritourism with Randy Graham of Curtis Orchard and Pumpkin Patch and with Steve Ayers of the U of I Extension. And we welcome your questions at 333-9455, 1-800-222-9455. That's the toll-free number, 1-800-222-WILL. Our email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Randy, and I understand this is not, the farm has been in the family, in the Curtis family for quite a long time.
Yes, it's part of a centennial farm. The Curtises moved to this area about 1878 and established a farm there at the corner of Curtis and Duncan Road. And this portion of the farm was acquired just a little later, but yes, the family's been here for a long time, mostly corn, soybean, and hog farmers.
That's not what you do now, though.
No, not at all. Through inheritance and divisions of the farm, my father-in-law, he was married in 1956, and he had essentially this 80-acre plot that is where the orchard is now, and they had a little bit of ground across the road, but it wasn't really enough to make a living on. And so he came back to the university, got a PhD in plant physiology, became one of the founding faculty members of Parkland College, and then in his mid-30s, this is probably the early 70s, he had a dramatic conversion to Christianity, and he started to reevaluate every facet of his life. And part of it included this small farm that he, you know, couldn't quite make a living off of, but, you know, land was something that is in the blood. You don't sell it, you know. So he was working two jobs, essentially, to make this thing work. And he also realized through his studies that very few people lived on a working farm anymore. When he was growing up, a lot higher percentage did. And he realized people were losing touch with their roots on the farm. So his goal was to become an ambassador for agriculture and to provide a place that people could visit to reestablish a connection with agriculture. Because we live in arguably one of the richest agricultural areas in the world. I mean, we sit here and look at flat land and cornfields, and a lot of people say, oh, this is boring, you know, there's no mountains, no ocean. But, you know, a lot of people would give anything to live in this rich of an agricultural climate. So he wanted people to have that connection. And it came down to a basic principle. He liked apples, so he thought he'd plant a few apple trees. But he was a corn, soybean, and hog guy, so he had no apple experience. So he stuck in like 700 of these little twigs, and they looked like little sticks in the ground. He thought, well, that's nothing, you know. So the next year he put 1,700 more in the ground. And the first year they had any kind of a crop, I had begun dating their daughter, and I had worked in ag because my best friend in junior high and high school was determined he was going to be a farmer, and I became his right-hand man. So I had all this ag experience, you know, walking soybeans and stuff. So I helped out on the farm a little bit. And in the early 80s, we went into this sudden exponential crop growth phase where there was no cooler capacity. There was, you know,
all of a sudden the apple trees started.
Yeah, they start producing. And each year it's an exponential growth from the previous year as far as production. And, you know, it was overwhelming in those early years.
At that point, did you have it out as a pick your own, or were you harvesting it yourself?
Both. You really have to do both in order to get the crop off at a timely fashion.
Because the customers coming in to pick their own aren't going to get the whole tree done.
Well, and frankly, nobody even knew we were out there in the early 80s. You know, no one had heard of Curtis Orchard. And so on top of all that, we were building facilities each year at an exponential rate as well. We were adding coolers, space for processing, expanding the store, remodeling the store, which used to be the old hog house. And over time, we've actually done an expansion on average every 2.5 years of some form or another over those 33 years.
Stephen Ayers with the U of I Extension, and you work with small farms. You're sitting here with a big smile on your face listening to that story, making me think there's a pattern here, because I guess if this was a larger farm, it might have gone to corn and soybeans, which is the dominant crop in this part of the country. And, you know, that would be that, I guess. But, Randy, the story you're telling, it sounds like one of continuous improvisation of, you know, just learning as you go. Is that what happens with small farms a lot, either whether they're in agritourism or elsewhere?
Well, it's not for everyone. And number one, you've got to be a people person. As Mark said earlier, dealing with the public can sometimes be rather challenging. And so that's not for everyone. So, you know, obviously in Illinois, the bulk of the farmers raise corn and soybeans and, you know, occasionally might have a group out to see the farm, but not every day to have hundreds or thousands of people that are visiting your farm. And that's what agritourism is about, getting people to your location. You know, what is your uniqueness that draws a family to your location?
We focused on two agritourism operations, Hardy's and Curtis, here in Champaign County from where we broadcast. But there must be others around the state, and people listening in other parts of Illinois may be close to other agritourism operations. How many are there?
There's around 700 in the state of Illinois.
700. These are places they may not have reindeer or they may not have a corn maze, but a place where you might go essentially get your own crop.
Right. You know, they've got an anchor, whether it's an orchard or the reindeer. Some people have the pumpkin patch is their main draw. And then they'll just add other activities. There are some that have zip lines.
Zip lines?
You know, the cable that's strung from a tower that you ride exciting 30 seconds or so as you zip down the line.
Some might say precarious, but go ahead.
Right. And so it's just the more activities and the broad range of activities, it just gives people more to do.
They sound like theme parks.
It's a mini theme park.
But you're talking here about small businesses because, you know, theme parks, heavy-duty theme parks are actually run by corporations. Are corporations involved in this sort of thing, agritourism in Illinois, or are these family businesses like the two in Champaign County?
It is pretty much a multi-generational. It allows a family or a number of families interested in agriculture to basically stay on the farm without having to expand to thousands of acres that you might need for a corn soybean operation.
Randy, the people aspect, is that a particular skill, just understanding your customers, working with them, I guess, both on a, you know, one-to-one basis, but also figuring out what will attract enough people to keep the business going well?
Yeah, I mean, that's a big aspect of the business. I think we take the educational aspect of it very seriously still. You know, I think it's amazing to us how many people come out who have never picked an apple off of a tree.
And
who don't understand the seasonality of fruit, in fact. They'll come out for a variety and we'll say, well, we had that variety in August, but it's gone now. Well, what do you mean gone? You know, well, its season came and it went, and next year there'll be another crop of that variety. You know, people have really lost touch with agriculture to a large degree. A lot of people have never picked a pumpkin from a vine, have never seen a pumpkin growing on a vine. And, you know, we talked about corn mazes earlier. As a child, I don't think I had ever walked into a cornfield, and I didn't grow up on a farm. You know, it's a unique experience to walk into a cornfield and to see, you know, oh, this is the ear of corn right here on the stalk, and this is the tassel on top, and those leaves are, you know, 4 or 5 inches wide. I mean, it's if you're a curious person at all, agriculture is a very fascinating subject, and we see that. I mean, not only in the kids, but in the adults as well. And I think one of the beautiful aspects of agritourism, it's one of the few things that you can do all together as a family, and everybody of every age, there's something there for them. You know, if you go to the movie theater, well, there's a type of movie the kids want to see. There's one the adults want to see. But this is something they do as a family, and we see that so often that all these generations are interacting together on our farm, and they're having a shared experience, and that's something that there isn't a lot of opportunity for in life anymore.
That's interesting, and it's not like you're giving out degrees in agriculture there, but if people want to find out things, especially starting from square one, where I think a lot of city folks are in terms of agriculture, this is one way to do it.
Yeah, and we have some educational boards up that people can, you know, the question and answer type things, you know, how many miles does a bee fly in its lifetime, that sort of thing. How much honey can a bee make in a lifetime, you know? And people are fascinated by that. We also have several thousand children come out on school tours, and those are educational tours that explain the function of honeybees, how apples are grown, how pumpkins are grown, how cider is made. And more we have adult groups coming on tours. And as Mark said, we also have quite a few international groups that come out. Some will do tours, some will do a wiener roast or some other activity. We have actually groups from some of the large corporations will bring a department out, and they'll do team building activities. They'll break up into teams and they'll go into the corn maze and try to solve the maze as a team to build camaraderie and a work together attitude for back at the office. So there are so many aspects to this business that you know, you can't even think of all of them. Sometimes your customers will surprise you with something new they've thought of.
Well, let me take a call now, and this is line one. Bobby from Champaign, good morning. You're on Focus.
Yes. Good morning. I was wondering, you know, I've been to Curtis Orchard, and when my son visits from Chicago, we like to go there with his little kids. But I was wondering why you didn't have anything about the more organic operations that are around here in Champaign County, like I think it's a Prairie Fruits Farm that's on North Lincoln.
I'm aware of that. Like they raise, among other things, goats and produce cheeses there.
Yeah, and then they have dinners and they have tours. They charge for the tours, and then you get some of their gelato and. I don't know what else because I haven't actually been on one of the formal tours, but there are different levels of agritourism, and I think it would. So I don't know if that's being counted as agritourism.
Well,
Steve,
that sounds like it's on the radar, isn't it?
Oh, right. I mean, Prairie Fruits gives lots of tours to lots of people, so there's all sorts of different operations that, you know, everything from apple orchards up to wineries.
Wineries is exactly what was going to come up next in my mind, is that places like Alto Vineyards. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they have a working vineyard up here. They certainly do downstate, but that's certainly something geared for people to come where the wine is, you know, where the grapes are being grown, where the wine is being made, and be a part of that environment.
Right, and you know, we have Wildwood also over in St. Joe, and which is elderberry wine, and then Sleepy Creek over in Oakwood, where they actually have about 10 acres of grapes and are both a vineyard and a winery.
Okay, so it's not everything's for kids when we're talking about agritourism, I guess, when you're talking about wineries. Randy, I did want to check with you on the organic part, because you do address that issue just as far as the way that your own crops work. It looks like you try to be organic as possible, but you see limits as far as just how production works here in this part of Illinois.
Yeah, there are some pests that there are no natural predators for, so we use integrated pest management. Basically, my family is the largest consumer of our own products, so I want the most effective and safest product possible that I can bring to bear on whatever disease or pest I'm dealing with. We also work closely with the university on the latest technologies in pest management. And part of that is computer modeling. We have temperature and leaf wetness monitors in the orchard. We have computer monitors that you can plug that information into. So it will tell you when to look for a pest, and then you do scouting to see if the pest is actually there at an economic threshold level that requires treatment. If it's not, then you don't treat. If it is, then you find the safest product possible that's the most environmentally friendly and the safest to the public and to yourself to address that pest. So our goal is to do it the best way possible, the safest, most effective with the technologies we have available.
This is Focus. I'm Jim Meadows. Still time for your questions about agritourism and any suggestions you have about agritourism operations that you've been to in your part of the state. Let us know about it. I'm here with Randy Graham from Curtis Orchard and Steve Ayers of the University of Illinois Extension. Our toll-free number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL. Our email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Steve, I'm wondering, for farmers who are looking at this sort of business, at agritourism, are there any basic lines of advice that you have for them?
Well, number one, come up with your idea and then do some business planning. Assess your land and location. If you're out in the middle of nowhere and 90% of the people would get lost trying to find you, you might want to reconsider having an agritourism operation. Obviously, Curtis Orchard is ideally located, and they just opened that interchange a few years ago. And
how is it that's right, the Curtis Road interchange. Well, what am I thinking? How has that had an impact on your business?
Oh, yes, most definitely. It's much simpler to get to us, particularly from some of the outlying markets like Bloomington. We draw visitors from, well, as far away as Chicago routinely, but that 60-mile radius is a real common draw. And it used to be kind of complicated to get people from Bloomington to our place before the interchange went in. But now you just bring them right down 57 and off, and we're less than a mile from that interchange.
You have to be marketing in a different way than if you were just selling crops to market, because you have to you have to reach the customer, let them know you're out there, let them know what you're doing. And I guess it's everything from the websites that we've linked to signs on the highway.
Yeah, that's right. And actually, that's morphed quite a bit over the years. I mean, we have a lot of Facebook followers now, and the social media aspect has really revolutionized what we do.
How does that work, the social media part? How has that changed things for you day-to-day basis?
Well, we post things quite frequently, like when a new variety comes available, we will post that, and immediately people will seize on that, and they will come out. I mean, sometimes they're out before we've actually got the apples on the shelf, because I'll tell my brother-in-law, well, we picked this variety, and he says, well, can I tell people that? I said, sure. You know, well, I haven't graded them yet, you know, but so it's almost instant. It's quite amazing.
We just had an email that came in asking about accessibility for people using wheelchairs.
Yeah, we're ADA compliant with all of our facilities, and we have access to the orchard itself for U-Pick. People take wheelchairs out into the orchard. We try to keep the U-Pick apple portion as close to the buildings as possible for as long as possible. It's not always doable as the crop gets picked out, but we try to save little blocks that are close to the building so that it's not too far in any given weekend for people to get to the apples themselves.
Now, can people get to you know, if you're in a wheelchair, can you get can you reach an apple?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Our trees are all either full dwarf or semi-dwarf trees.
And a dwarf tree, just give an idea what sort of size we're talking
about. A fully dwarf tree is about 6 feet tall. Semi-dwarf, we keep ours 8 to 10, but the branches hang down to the ground. So,
okay.
Yeah, I mean, you can...
People are not getting going up on ladders to
Oh, no. You don't want that.
Now, was that something you learned from trial and error, or was your original crop a dwarf crop?
The original crop was semi-dwarf. When my father-in-law entered the business, that was the standard. People had moved away from the old-fashioned standard seedlings that were 40 feet tall, probably back in the 50s and 60s, I would guess. Now the standard is more fully dwarf and high density, so it's even taken a step smaller since we entered the market. And so now most of our new plantings are even that higher density, smaller tree.
Now, I'm wondering, in that case, is that would you use that tree for the part of the crop where that you harvest yourself, or is that really just aiming at the U-Pick market?
We use it for both because
it's enough production to make it worth the while?
It's more production, actually. Yeah, you get a lot more production per acre. You get into production quicker, which is key to us because we're always looking for new varieties that will attract the public and new varieties that they maybe can't get anywhere else or that aren't common. So you can get into production in 3 to 5 years with a fully dwarf tree, and it's more like 5 to 7 for a semi-dwarf tree. And, you know, people in the computer age are used to this instant gratification. Well, You're not quite ever going to get there for orchards, but, you know, at least we can speed the process up a little bit by going with those trees.
And, you know, I'm wondering, we're talking about what is really the basis, you know, the original product, the apples, but I'm looking at your website, the cafe, the bakery, the country store, the parties, the tours, the activities. This is really a lot of things that you're doing that go beyond just having a farm.
You wear a lot of hats, and if you're not a type of person that is comfortable with a lot of job descriptions, it may not be the right business for you. Like some people are very just wired differently. They like one, they're interested in one area and that's it. But in our job, you have to kind of be a semi-expert at many different areas.
Steve Ayers, in talking to farmers about this business, is that something is that something people need to be warned about, or is that a surprise that there are just so many different maybe new skill sets that you're going to have to pick up to run this sort of operation?
Well, you have to evaluate yourself and your family and see what your interests are, and then go from there. And obviously, these operations have grown over the years. It's taken decades to, expand each of their operations.
We're talking about, you know, the difference between a small farm and a big farm. And I don't know if there's a working definition. What's when you think small farm, what sort of acreage are you talking about?
Well, small farm, we've got close to 1,400 farms in Champaign County. And there are 447 that are less than 9 acres. So there's
9 acres?
Less than 9 acres. And the USDA back in, they do a ag census every 5 years. So they just started looking at less than 49 acres back in 2007. So that's where they came up with the 447 farms that were less than 9.
Curtis Orchard, your total acreage is?
We're on an 80-acre block.
So maybe a big small farm, we're going by that.
It would be a big small farm, yes.
But and to just get by with commercial production, I mean just growing crops, 50, 60 acres is going to be tough?
It depends on what you're growing. And corn and soybeans would be, you're talking hundreds on into thousands.
It might be hundreds or thousands of acres?
Of acres,
yes. Would be the way to make it work. Maybe, what do a lot of these owners do? Do they just lease out their land and let somebody else take the risk, or do they just struggle? Or do they all go into operations like Curtis Orchard?
About at least two-thirds of the land, at least corn soybean production, is tenant farmed. Mm-hmm. And so you can be a landowner and not actually farm it, okay. which is very common.
But it also sounds like this could be a good candidate, depending on the other factors, for some sort of agritourism.
Right, and much of the specialty crop production is done part-time. As Paul Curtis, you know, was working two or three different jobs as he built the orchard, and that's very, very common, is you don't make agritourism your full-time occupation just starting out.
It sounds like a full-time job for you right now, though, Randy.
Oh, yes. It's a full-time job for a number of family members now. But at the time, it was not in the early years. And it took about 9 years, really, to become profitable. So it's not something that you enter into lightly and expecting to make a quick profit on. It takes a lot of capital to establish something like this.
We have 20 seconds before we have to go, but I do want to get one more emailed question, at least for Curtis Orchard. Any special activities for Halloween?
We've not really focused on Halloween per se. We kind of draw the fall crowd, and we've not wanted to have anything scary out there because we want to have it really fun for kids, even young kids.
Peaceful Halloween, at least at this one example of agritourism.
That's right.
Thank you very much, Randy Graham of Curtis Orchard and Steve Ayers of the U of I Extension. Thanks also to Mark Hardy of Hardy's Reindeer Ranch earlier in the program. This is Focus on WYLL.